Well, today really is a special day. Not just because of the snow, not just because of Valentine's Day, not just because of the pancakes, but today is not only Valentine's Day, but the first day of Lent. Lent, that 40-day plus the 6 weeks of Sundays leading up to Easter. And actually, in the traditional Christian church, as most of us know, it's a time of penance and abstinence, a time when people give up worldly pleasures. And it actually came, interestingly, from the word lenten, which means lengthening. And so traditionally, it was all about the spring season, when the days were lengthening or getting longer. And theologians of the early 19th and 20th century taught, and maybe some of you were taught this too, that Lent was established by the apostles themselves. And today, many people really still think that that Lenten period has to do with all the events leading up to the resurrection. But as Charles Fillmore reminds us in his book, Keep a True Lent, and by the way, we have lots of multiple copies in the book, Keep a True Lent, in the lending library. And the back of the book has wonderful little daily practice for every single day during Lent. So if you'd like to grab one on your way out, they're there. But in that book, Charles makes the point, there's no reference in all of the New Testament to Lenten practices. And historical records actually show that the practice of fasting and penance before Lent began in the first century after Christ. But the duration was, are you ready for this, only 40 hours, not 40 days. It would be a little easier, really, to give up things for 40 hours, wouldn't it? It became 40 days after the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. Now, the idea of a 40-day spiritual practice does have a biblical basis. It is to commemorate the 40 days of fasting and prayer that Jesus spent in the wilderness. And we've talked before about the number 40. To the ancient Hebrew writers, 40 was a four-square number, symbolizing a foundation for something to follow. And metaphysically, the number means as long as it takes to achieve completeness. Now, Charles Fillmore taught that just as spring is a time of rebirth, and new life, Lent is a time for spiritual rebirth and renewal. It's a time for us to realign ourselves with our Christ mind, for exploring what we might need to release in order to live in full, complete awareness of the love of God active in our lives always. Now, we might decide to forego or fast from, if you will, negative thinking or any behaviors that foster a sense of separation from God. As the slide says, letting go clears the way for letting God in. And the good news is, you don't have to give up joys from your human experience. You don't have to give up chocolate or soda unless you really want to. And the bad news is, it might be easier to give that up than to give up some of our ingrained negative thinking. So, happy first day of Lent and happy Valentine's Day. Would you believe, I did a little research this week, that Valentine's Day retail spending in the U.S. is expected to reach a record of, are you ready for this? $18.9 billion. More than half, 54.9% of Americans over 17 plan to celebrate Valentine's Day in 2016, according to a survey conducted by the National Retail Federation. Are we surprised about who conducted the survey? The average person, they say, celebrating Valentine's Day will spend about $140, with $97 going to a spouse or significant other, and the rest split among family members, friends, coworkers, children, classmates or teachers, and pets or other recipients. Okay, don't tell my cats that pets get gifts for a Valentine's Day. Actually, 21.2% of those surveyed said they intended to buy gifts for their pets. Can you believe that? So what gifts do Americans choose to express their love? Well, of course, the typical ones, you know, the roses and flowers, the jewelry, the dinners out. But I thought you might enjoy hearing about some of the more unique Valentine gifts highlighted on the internet in a section called 10 Weird Valentine Gifts for Your Stupid Cupid. Okay, get ready. You might want to take notes here. A few of the favorites are, well, there's the heart-shaped egg cutter. I'm not, you know, to prepare a nice Valentine's breakfast for your sweetheart. I'm not sure how you would flip those eggs, but at any rate. And if your sweetheart is allergic to flowers, you might send a very romantic salami bouquet. Okay? And we know these freezing temperatures can make outdoor hand holding a little impractical, can't they? So the solution for you is the heart-shaped mitten for two. And another unique idea is the waterproof shower notepad, something everyone has to have so that you can take notes in the shower. Now, for those of us who are environmentally conscious, the waterproof paper is totally recyclable, environmentally friendly, and non-toxic. And each pen is water resistant with soy-based ink. So there you go. And last but not least, you can turn yourself into a Valentine by sporting this stylish Cupid costume. Here we go. Okay. Now, I am not going to say today who posed for that one. That's going to remain privilege information. Okay. I didn't say that. So this is all very entertaining, but what does it have to do with the Lenten preparation for Easter? Well, actually, Valentine's Day might be one of the most truly Christian holidays, and it's not because it's named after a saint. It's because it's a day designated to express love to a special person or persons, or I guess pets. And despite some differences between love of the divine type and love of the human type, Charles Fillmore notes that all love is really divine in origin. He says, when passing through the prism of the human mind, love is broken into many colors, yet like the ray of white light, its essence is pure. And a passage that is part of the Unity wedding ceremony from 1 John chapter 4 reads, "Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. Since God has loved us so much, we ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is perfected in us. Those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them." And we know that God is love, pure and unconditional. And when we are able to express love for another human being, we become really more aware of God's presence within and presence on this earth. As spiritual beings having a human experience, we have the power, the inherent power, to express the love of God. And we have this power through the power of love, one of the 12 gifts from God, or one of the 12 powers. And the power of love is represented by the disciple John. Now, John was reputed to be the one whom Jesus loved. Also, John seemed to be closer to this whole idea of divine love, and his gospel is just full of really amazing, amazing insights about the power of divine love. And it is the body part that's represented, the bodily center of love, is just behind the heart. That makes sense. We associate the Hallmark rendition of, you know, love with hearts. And what love does is it actually enables us to see and understand our wholeness. It is the power that is, Charles Fillmore says, the pure essence of being that joins together the whole human family in divine harmony, the divine quality that sees good everywhere and desires only good come to everyone. Love is a mighty magnet that brings our good to us, adjusts all misunderstandings, and makes our lives happy, harmonious, and free. And when you think about it, just as the heart is always pumping and nourishing the rest of our body, it's the power of love that nourishes our soul. And Jesus the Christ tells us that love is the greatest commandment. In John 13, 34, 35, he says, I give you a new commandment that you love one another, just as I have loved you. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples, if you love one another. And all three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, highlight a point where the Pharisees have gathered to challenge Jesus, not an uncommon practice. And from Matthew 20, 34 to 40, we read, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. And one of them, an expert in law, tested him with this question, Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Now remember, in addition to the Ten Commandments handed down to Moses on Mount Sinai, Jewish law required believers to follow 613 additional commandments. I don't know how they remembered them all, much less follow them. I mean, a huge number. So surely this lawyer thought that this was a question to make Jesus hesitate and stumble. But Jesus responds immediately, does not miss a beat, saying, Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Now in Mark and Luke, it's also added, and with all your strength. But Matthew stops with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on those two commandments. And now the reference, all the laws and all the prophets, is simply a reference back to the Hebrew Bible, which Matthew was always doing. In Luke's version, Jesus concludes by saying, there's no other commandment greater than these. So regarding the love the neighbors part, some of you may have seen this billboard. That love your neighbor thing, I meant it, God. Seriously, though, Jesus shows us in word and deed that neighbor meant all humankind, including our enemies. There was a cartoon recently in the paper from For Better or For Worse, and I don't know if you can read it, but I'll read it to you. They're shopping for Valentine's, and the mom says, aren't you going to need another package, honey? There are more than 18 kids in your class. And the little girl says, that's okay. I'm only going to give them to the ones I like. And mom says, that's not fair. If you're going to take Valentine's to school, you should give them to everyone. And she has this really awful look on her face, and she says, that means I have to give a Valentine to gulp Melody Morrison? Well, you know what? We all have Melody Morrisons in our lives, don't we? And this commandment, this what's called the greatest commandment, is the foundation of the law. And really, it breaks down to the Cliff Notes version of it to three things. Love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. I think that's easy for us to do. Love yourself. Maybe not so easy sometimes. And thirdly, love your neighbor, friend or foe, as yourself. This is frequently called the heart, soul, and mind love. And Bible scholar Ed Townley poses a very intriguing question about this threefold process. He says, it really creates some challenges, because when you think about it, if we're to give all our love to God, all our heart, mind, and soul, then what's left for ourselves and our neighbors? And if we love ourselves and our neighbors, doesn't that mean our love for God is less than total? Well, my first reaction to this question was, well, our human minds treat love as finite. You know, like a piece of chocolate cake to be divided into thirds, or maybe like a certain number of pancakes later to be divided among those of us who are eating them. But really, divine love is a divine idea, and divine ideas are always infinite. And so love is as infinite as its source. The more we give, the more we have. But Townley has an even more profound explanation. He says that God is not a being to whom we address an energy of love. God is the energy of love. We, our neighbors, and God are not separate entities. We are all one. And if we simply focus on our God-given energy of love and allow it to flow through us, we will automatically be expressing love in and to all things. So loving ourselves, we are expressing God. Loving our neighbors and people that we don't even like, we are expressing God. Perfect love has nothing to do with how many gifts are given or received. It's not about the $18.9 billion. It's about how we see one another. Perfect love is simply recognizing the Christ, that presence of God in ourselves and one another, even when it's hard to see it. And here's the question. If we are unable to love ourselves, to see ourselves as perfect and whole, can we possibly behold the Christ in others? And when we hold negative images of who we are, when we let opinions of others define and diminish us, when we dwell in resentment and guilt about things we have done or left undone, we are not living from our true source, and we are actually blocking the flow of love. It would be like if I took this rubber band and wrapped it around my finger so tightly, whoops, I just broke it, but if I didn't break it, wrapped it around really tightly like that, in just a matter of hours, I would cut off the blood supply. And in fact, there are some horrible pictures on the internet of kids who have done just that and have had to be rushed to the emergency room. And that's exactly the way it is with God's love flowing through us. With all of our negative attitudes, especially about ourselves, we can block the love that God intends for us. One with God, we are on this earth to express all the divine attributes, love, faith, strength, peace, and harmony. Our mission is to express the love we already are. And perhaps this means, whoops, there's love your neighbor and his friend. Perhaps this means extending beyond the boundaries of what we thought was ourselves, extending beyond the boundaries of our human selves to align with our spiritual identity. And only when we are centered in our own spiritual power of limitless love can we see the divine essence in others. Now, one of my favorite teachers at the Village, Reverend Tom Thorpe, wrote, "When we love someone, we love them not because of what they are, but simply because they are. What they are may delight us or it may aggravate us. Either way, we can love them. To understand that when we look into someone's eyes, we're looking into the eyes of another child of God. That is what perfect love is all about." And in the words of the poet laureate James Dillett Freeman, "When we believe God is love, we love. That is all. We love those we love out of the joy of giving, with no thought of return. We do not love them because they love us. We do not love them because they are pleasant and easy to love. And in fact, I might add here that sometimes those people who seem the least lovable are the ones who need our love the most." Freeman continues, "We stand by them in their pain. We stand by them in their shame. We stand by them when they make deep and hard demands on us. We see the world through the eyes of love, and how different life looks." Now, really, we know it's easy to love those who love us, isn't it? It's easy to love those who think like us, those who worship like us, those who are good to us. The challenge is to love those who might seem on the outer different from us, as this example. I love that. The dog and the cat have no trouble here, do they? Even though they're different species, they have no trouble. Sometimes we do have trouble. It's also hard for us to realize that it's not necessary or even appropriate to like everything others do. That's not part of what love is. And it's also, guess what, not possible. Another cartoon, this one from Baby Blues. It's a little light. I'll read it to you. The little boy's written a paper about his dad, and it says, "My hero is my dad because he's the nicest dad in the world. For example, if I drilled a bunch of holes in his workbench when he got home, I bet he would say it's just okay, and he wouldn't be mad at all." And the little girl comes up to him and says, "Did the essay get a bad review?" And he says, "Let's just say it needs some factual revision." So sometimes we need to do some factual revision about people in our lives. We don't, as I said, we don't have to agree with the wrong things that people do, and we certainly do not have to endure any kind of abuse. Loving ourselves, of course we set the boundaries. But regardless of actions, regardless of appearances, Jesus is telling us that we must recognize and love the Christ in all persons, and we do it simply because it is our nature to love. Over the door of the prayer room at Silent Unity, one simple prayer is printed. It contains six words. Would anybody like to guess what it is? Anybody guess? Six words? Silent Unity? What do you think, Dan? That would be good. Our words out here, the truth shall set you free, and that would be a good choice. Thank you, Dan, for giving me a choice. I appreciate that. The actual answer is, I behold the Christ in you. And this is the absolute basis for which everybody prays, to see the wholeness in people, to behold the truth of them, no matter what we're seeing on the outer. And it's extremely important. It's what perfect love is all about. And so, in her book, Your God-Given Potential, Winifred Houseman beautifully, I think, summarizes this idea of the power of perfect love. She says, when we let it take over our lives and transform us from within, the magnetic power of love is stronger than any force in the universe. We begin to see things in a new light. As people in love begin to discover new beauty and new greatness in each other, so we, through the attracting, energizing spirit of love awakening in us, begin to see ourselves, others, and the world in a whole new light. Inspired by new vision, we are aroused to greater spiritual activity. We come to know more, feel more, and to enter more fully into the spiritual adventure of loving and living. So, to everyone, happy Valentine's Day, and have a wonderful Lenten season, and may you remember to let all you do be done in perfect love. And let's just take some time now to take this into our hearts as we affirm the source of love's omnipotence and the oneness with all that is good. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.